Mark Morano is unleashed, and he's taking on the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, and the United Nations on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, breaking news. Net zero leaves the United Kingdom paying five times more electricity than China. More for electricity than China. What's going on here? The UK is the leader in offshore wind. Let's take a listen to this. This is Net Zero Watch out of the UK reporting on this. Since the UK is already a world leader in offshore wind, it follows that the UK should have some of the lowest electricity prices in the world. Remember, they went after, they invested the billions and the mandates and the subsidies, and they shut down. I remember the one point was Boris Johnson was bragging they were going to pour cement over the fracking wells. They were done with fossil fuels. They were going to go all renewable. They were going to beat China's pants. They were going to embrace the future. And renewables were cheaper and more plentiful, and they could rely on the sun and the wind, and they didn't need to spoil the earth or ruin the climate, and everyone would benefit. Wah, wah, wah. We have lovely parting gifts. Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. Since the UK was a world leader in offshore wind, it follows we should have some of the lowest electricity prices. In fact, the opposite is true. People in England now pay more than twice as much for electricity as they do in just the US, where shale gas has transformed the energy markets, and more than five times. The UK pays more than five times as much for energy as residents in China, where they're still building several coal-powered plants a week. Gee, could there be a correlation? Embracing fossil fuels as China done equals cheap energy versus virtue signaling to the net zero agenda and ruining your energy infrastructure to raising rates. Gee, you think the smartest people in the room, I didn't go to Harvard and Yale, but you think the smartest people who did could figure this out? Not a chance in hell. The reason the UK electricity prices are so high is because there's a massive hidden cost in renewables. And this is by a retired scientist named John Fernley, writing in the Daily Skeptic for Net Zero Watch. Just incredible story, incredible, incredible. It's just amazing how this happens. Okay. We just laid out what's happened to the UK. We're laying out, you can look at the United States, you can look at California with the most expensive electricity, with the insane environmental policies and anti-fossil fuel policies they have. And they're the ones, the hotbed of banning the gas-powered car. And all of the US Western states, Washington and others, where they want to ban, they're coming after your gas-powered lawnmower, gas-powered leaf blowers. And by the way, Amazon, which is going to punish and crush the small startup, the little kid who wants this after school can afford a leaf blower or a lawnmower, is now going to have to buy an expensive electric one to compete with, drumroll please, Jeff Bezos. Amazon is starting a lawn care service. Oh, isn't that interesting? Guess what? They'll be able to afford all of these new climate compliance costs. The small businesses won't. Wah, wah, wah. Gee, is there an agenda here? Okay. John Kerry. This is a clip I missed. This was right around the time of the UN climate summit. And this was according to Bloomberg News. John Kerry's come up with a reason why you don't want to fight climate change, why you don't want to embrace green energy, and why the world is not embracing it as fast as he would like. It's G-R-E-E-D, greed. You're a greedy bastard for not going along with John Kerry and his daughter, Vanessa, by the way. Remember, she's the World Health Organization and climate envoy. She's the World Health Organization's climate public health liaison or some title like that. She's the one who said, you have no choice. John Kerry echoes that, but adds, you're greedy for not wanting to do it. Clip one, John Kerry explains.
You ask, what is it that's in the way? The imperative of status quo, the way money works, the numbers of people who have pressured some of the oil and gas companies because they weren't doing as well as the ones that weren't doing stuff on the climate. Look at the pressure, you know, a bunch of AFFed owners and managers in New York and elsewhere in the world have been under to make more money. So put it down to greed. G-R-E-E-D, greed.
And there you have it. G-R-E-E-D, greed. You don't want to save the planet. All you care about is making money. I thought Al Gore said the green agenda was all about making money. And I thought all these stimulus packages, we're spending $1.2 billion now, latest estimates for the Inflation Reduction Act. We had $100 billion nearly with President Obama's green energy stimulus. We have every mandate and subsidy baked in, the banning of the competition of fossil fuels. A lot of people are making money, but not general. The prosperity is not general wide. The greedy ones here, Senator Kerry, Secretary Kerry, Climate Envoy Kerry, are the ones who are sucking off the trough of the federal renewable stimulus money, Inflation Reduction Act. Remember, it was the Washington Post who reported that Al Gore did a PowerPoint of all the companies you should be investing in, and he was either a founder or on the board of all these companies. And guess what happened when Obama ended up doing his first green stimulus? Al Gore's companies got fully funded by U.S. taxpayer dollars. That's greed. It's greed when you force small businesses out of business and into bankruptcy because they can't afford the regulatory costs of the green revolution and net zero that you're pushing. And like the aforementioned Amazon lawn care service, I'm sure they'll be able to handle all the bans on gas-powered lawn equipment and all the electric and unreliable, expensive alternative. They'll be able to buy 20 of each electric item with the backing of Jeff Bezos, who just bought a beachfront home. What about during COVID, the largest transfer of wealth from the poor and middle class to the wealthy, the biggest creation of billionaires ever based on vaccine mandates, based on the government crushing small and medium-sized businesses? What about what's happening in agriculture with Bill Gates, the single largest farmland owner, followed closely by Jeff Bezos, followed closely by China, and farmers being forced to till the land they used to own now as renters? Where is the greed involved there as the government gobbles up? Anyway, you can go on and on, but John Kerry actually said that. You are greedy if you don't support the net zero climate policies. All right. Speaking of which, in Canada, this is a televised debate. I missed this. It's not that old, but the Pierre Poilievre, how do you say his name? It's French. Poilievre, running against the likely candidate to run against Justin Trudeau. This is them in Parliament debating over a carbon tax in Parliament. And he just posted this week. So this is relatively recent. I don't have the exact day, but it's from Pierre Poilievre's YouTube channel. Let's watch clip two.
This prime minister is not worth the cost. Indeed, his carbon tax, which the parliamentary budget officer has proven, costs 60% of Canadians more than they get back in rebates, is now opposed by 70% of Canadians. Everybody understands that the tax is driving people to the food bank. That's why six premiers, including the Liberal Premier of Newfoundland and Labrador, have asked for a meeting. Will he agree to a televised carbon tax conference if he's so sure of himself on this issue?
What would be also helpful is if we were able to deliver the doubling of the rural top-up to put hundreds of dollars in the pockets of Canadians, but the Conservative Party is blocking the legislation to double the rural top-up.
That is mathematically impossible, that given that the NDP Liberal government has a combined majority and can pass anything it wants, which is exactly why we're in such a mess today as a country. After 8 years, this NDP Liberal Prime Minister is not worth the cost, and that's why the Parliamentary Budget Officer confirms 60% of Canadians are paying more in carbon taxes than getting back in rebates. But why doesn't the Prime Minister, if he believes the contrary, why doesn't he have the courage to sit down in a televised and open forum and have a carbon tax conference with the premiers?
He'll never do that carbon tax conference because he would get eaten alive by the angry peasants in his mind. The hoi polloi who don't, actually not the hoi polloi, that's the wealthy class, but the poor schmucks who don't want to go along with Justin Trudeau's virtue signaling to save the planet with a particularly onerous carbon tax in Canada. By the way, the Canadian Economics Group did the most phenomenal analysis of a carbon tax, and the conclusion was so simple, everyone can understand it. Carbon taxes raise global CO2 emissions, period. Carbon taxes raise emissions, period. All it does is offshore your energy production to countries with lower environmental standards that aren't under a carbon tax. Voila. We saw the example earlier in the show with England and China just taking over with much cheaper energy, five times cheaper energy than England, as they continue to go green. And all that Canada does, we're meeting our goals and the carbon tax is getting rid of fossil fuel. Oh, this is wonderful. The earth is smiling. Meanwhile, China, India, Brazil, Venezuela, the OPEC countries, India, they just keep ramping it up as they laugh at the West just handing them all this work and industry and jobs. But good for him. I've told you my objections about Pierre Poilievre in the past, as he accepts this whole narrative of the climate's a problem and we need a solution. So he wants to sequester carbon. He wants to plant trees. He's buying into it. I wish he could just say that, F it, and move on from that. I don't expect him to. It's a shame. But he's still good. And there's the other candidates running. Okay. The clip four, I'm going to jump and then we'll go back to the other one. But Joe Rogan has a great rant here about the FDA's Orwellian lie about ivermectin. Apparently, the FDA was taken to a lawsuit by the makers of ivermectin for calling it horse manure. They did a tweet that said, seriously, folks, you're not an animal. Stop taking this, you know, for COVID. And Joe Rogan, in his eloquent way, says, it's for humans too, you effing idiot. Anyway, this is Joe Rogan explaining the latest about the FDA having to back away from their famous claims that this was not, CNN called it horse paste, but they called it for animals. Clip four.
The FDA had to take down all of their tweets about COVID with in reference to ivermectin.
Wow.
Like, you're not a horse, y'all. Stop it. Yeah. And this is about a medication that had been prescribed billions of times to human beings.
Yeah.
The FDA. You're not a horse. You're not a cow. Seriously, y'all. You're not a horse. You're not a cow. Seriously, y'all. Stop it. Why you should not you... Go back. Why you should not use ivermectin to treat or prevent COVID-19 from FDA.
Wow.
Just like, that is just propaganda. Just full-on propaganda.
Yeah.
That's like saying penicillin is veterinary medicine, because they do use it in veterinary applications.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's for humans too, you fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And has it been used for humans? Has it saved lives?
Yeah.
Yes. Has ivermectin won the fucking Nobel Prize?
Yeah.
Yes.
So is penicillin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a human...
Yeah.
medication that has one of the safest profiles of any medication known.
Yeah.
And now they had to take down, pull the article that they had to take all that down. So they had to delete 140 social media posts that were disparaging ivermectin.
But
doctors have always been allowed to use off-label medications, especially when shown to be effective.
Right.
And there's a ton of randomized controlled trials that shows ivermectin to be effective for the treatment of COVID-19, including in entire Uttar Pradesh in India,
India
where that's all they used it. They had an incredible result.
Yeah.
Look, people have used it. They used it. But when I used it and I talked, I had no fucking idea what can of worms I was opening up.
Yeah, they made you look like this.
Bro, they changed
skull.
My color. They changed the color of my face. Yeah. CNN was all in, but to their own detriment.
And now people lost faith in,
oh
in
my
CNN.
God. The COVID thing to them was one of the worst experiences in terms of public trust.
There's no one quite like Joe Rogan. He lays it out there. Everything he said was a truth bomb. And I don't even mind the F-bombs. I think they really added to his argument. The FDA, this is deep shame. And his analogy of, it's like saying penicillin is horse paste because they use it on animals. This was like the most insane dystopian hell, what happened with COVID, and is continuing to happen now. All right. This is a great one. Audience shocked by Megyn Kelly's expletive-filled tirade over transgender issue. This was a sports columnist named Nancy Armour supporting the athlete Dawn Staley's support of a transgender woman transgender women competing in sports, i.e. men and claiming to be women competing in sports. And Megyn Kelly's just had it with these corporate sports writers and some famous athletes who are still defending the idea that a man can declare himself a woman and then go compete against women. So here's Megyn Kelly just going full on anger. Clip three.
You could stand up for women, but you're too cowardly to do it. She says, I don't have all the answers, but I'm always looking for more of them. I've got one for you, Nancy. Shut the fuck up until you know what you're talking about. Because girls are getting hurt by male basketball players posing as girls. I take you out to Massachusetts, where Lowell was playing in a game. The Lowell school was playing in a game, and they had to call it at the half because three players got hurt. It's happening over and over and over and over. I'm so sick of these women who are so terrified of the woke mob or trying to shore up their own bona fides with this crowd, afraid to say what they know is right. I have a daughter who played basketball just a weeks ago. And the thought of her going up against a biological man on that court is terrifying.
Wow. Megyn Kelly on fire, rightfully so. Remember, she was the one who was fired for talking from NBC News for talking about what's the big deal with blackface. She was absolutely right. It's a, you know, the idea that she was just, she referenced it and then, oh my gosh. And then of course, NBC News was looking for a reason to fire her. But Megyn Kelly, she interviewed me back in 2007-08 on Fox News many times. She was the, I want to say the day side anchor when I would go on. And maybe when I was working in the Senate or right after I left the Senate. And she came a long way. Then she got her own primetime anchor show. And then, of course, she left Fox News. And then she went to NBC. And now she's happily in the independent broadcasting world where she doesn't have these paymasters to answer to in the corporate world, which is very impressive. That she's doing, and for whatever reason, the transgender issue has red-pilled Megyn Kelly several orders of magnitude from wherever she was before that. She is on fire lately and angry. Okay, final clip. RFK Jr. being pinned down by corporate media about what January 6th really was. Was it an assault on democracy? Was it an insurrection? And the answer may surprise you. RFK handles this very well. Clip five, RFK Jr.
That's not okay, and it's not okay.
Do you, believe it was an insurrection?
Was stolen. I think it was a protest that turned into a riot. I don't know what your definition of an insurrection is. If your definition is armed men who are intending to take over the United States government, it wasn't that. People committed criminal acts. Those people deserve to be in jail. You know, we're living in a time when Americans don't trust their government anymore. That is really what the problem is. There is no trust in government.
And there you have it. By the way, I should have said former corporate media. That is actually Chris Cuomo, who is now, you know, I don't mind him at all. I mean, he's the Chris Cuomo I originally knew. I met him in 1997 in Washington, D.C. He came into my office. I was working for Free Congress, Paul Weyrich's organization. We had a National Empowerment Television. He seemed like a normal, unassuming, humble guy. I liked him a lot. We had a great conversation. Even in the early days, I always thought he was good. And then he just sort of got this, I don't know if you'd call it inflated ego, but of course, it all peaked during COVID. And he got into all these workout videos of him pumping weights. And then he, of course, got in the lie at CNN about, you know, he quarantined at home when it turned out he had left his home and was looking at property and was yelling at bicyclists on the street and endangering everyone around him, according to the narrative. But he ended up leaving CNN because he defended his brother or did something. I don't even care the reason now, but he's actually been making incredible political sense, red pill, very independent since he left. And that was him interviewing RFK Jr. But RFK Jr. just nailed it out of the park. It was not an insurrection. And the real threat to democracy is the fact that people don't trust government institutions anymore. And that is what January 6th was really about. Okay. When we come back, we're going to have Sterling Burnett joining the program, director of the Robinson Center on Climate and Environmental Policy at the Heartland Institute. And we are going to talk about all things green energy. I'll ask him, by the way, about the UK's huge success rate of of going full green and now paying five times the electricity of China. Doesn't make sense because renewables are supposed to be cheaper, rely on the sun and the wind, and they're supposed to be cheaper than fossil fuels. What went wrong? But anyway, we'll be right back at that. Before we go, I have been reading this announcement. Weekend Truth Festival. If you would like to see all your favorite freedom fighters on the stage across one weekend, then listen up. This weekend's Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shiremani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Lee Teesler, Mark Atwood, David Clues, Allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need to do is bring a tent, a sleeping bag, some good vibes, as food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will be provided. For more information on how to find out how to reserve your place at the festival in early May, visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. That's weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. Don't hang around because only a limited number of places are still available. Okay, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be right back with Sterling Burnett right after these messages.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff. Like making sure your kids are in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, standinthelight.uk. This is a special announcement. How do you fancy bank holiday weekend at a music festival for a truth and freedom tribe? Well, 30 awake artists, not woke, including Danny Rampling and Mobius Loop on an all-night acoustic fire pit, bouncy castles, Hope Sussex for the children, plus loads of amazing stalls, scrumptious food vendors. The event is not to be missed by anyone who's aware of the truth of the world. A Stand in the Park and Light Paper presents Stand in the Light, a truth music festival in the beautiful Lake District, May 24th through May 27th. You get 4 days of camping, full access to the whole festival for just British pound, $60 plus fee, booking fee. Children under 5 come free. There's no better bargain anywhere. Visit our website now to make sure you don't miss what is going on. To be a brilliant weekend for the whole Freedom family. Standinthelight.uk. All right. Welcome to the program now, Sterling Burnett. Sterling, thank you for joining Unleashed today here on TNT.
Let's enjoy it.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Welcome back. You're the director of the Robinson Center Climate and Environmental Policy of the Heartland Institute. Now, as we talked about last time, all the green energy, let's just start out. How is this experiment of green energy? How would you rate it around the world right now? You have the farmers protests in Europe. You have, let me read you the story and we'll start with this. This was the Net zero leaves the United Kingdom paying five times more for their electricity than China. This is from Net Zero Watch. Let's start with this, Sterling. What's going on? Because Al Gore for decades has said solar and wind are cheaper. They rely on the wind and the sun. You don't need all this extraction. They're earth friendly. And as soon as we go to this, our electricity rates are going to drop. No sacrifice is necessary. All these entrepreneurs are going to make money. What is happening in England that they're not reaping the benefits? They're now a leader in offshore wind.
To be fair, it's not just England.
Yeah, I understand it's England, that. Yeah.
And California and all of New England, which is just getting ready to shut down their last coal plant. And do you want to know where energy prices are highest? England, Germany, which is already farther ahead of England, California, all of New England. The answer is Al Gore lied. Al Gore lied. John Kerry lied. Anyone who tells you wind and solar are cheaper than fossil fuels for electricity or anything else are lying to you. How do we know this? The data, the cost tell the story. It's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of look at where the prices are highest. Look at how they've risen as you've added more wind and solar to the grid and removed coal. They say, well, yeah, wind is free. You're right. It blows. The sun shines when it shines. Remember, doesn't shine all the time. But they don't generate energy in and of themselves for your home. You have to have really big, expensive wind turbines built. The wind may be free, but the equipment that used to harness it and generate electricity is not. Neither is the equipment for solar panels. They all depend on stuff from China. So we're more and more dependent on China for our energy as opposed to energy independent, which we used to be here. In the end, it's a lie. And if they, you know, they seem to take, I think it was Lenin's admonishment to heart. A lie told 1,000 times unrefuted becomes the truth. Well, that's where we're at.
How did we fall for this? In other words, how are we still? I was just talking about the Pierre Poilievre, the man running against Justin Trudeau. He's still out there saying he's against the carbon tax, but he still buys into this climate crisis narrative. He said climate's a problem and we're going to solve it with, you know, carbon capture. We're going to solve it with planting trees and some kind of, you know, wave harnessing of energy. I mean, you still have mainstream Republican politicians afraid to say what you just said. They don't want to be seen as against them. But when I worked in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, we had major conservative senators, top aides, who wanted to oppose Obama's cap and trade bill, the carbon version of a carbon tax back then, literally say we don't want to be seen as against the earth. Is that how they silence the opposition? Why can't more people speak as plainly and clearly as you just did in describing solar and wind?
Well, I think there's two reasons. Some people are just uninformed and they think the earth is at stake. Some people, however, even if they know that science does not say the earth is at stake, and that's what the science says very clearly, we're not in a climate crisis and we don't face one. They don't want to be branded by the mainstream media as being, you know, dinosaurs or head in the sand or paid shills. Secondly, a lot of them are like, you know, they're swamp creatures. There are people on Capitol Hill that want to stay on Capitol Hill. They want to go to the same parties that everyone else goes to. They want to be invited. They don't want to be pariahs among their so-called peers. And so they get along to go along.
And that's amazing because that, I think, that virtue signaling has cost us a lot in this battle against green energy. I want to play this clip and get your reaction because this is what John, this was actually Bloomberg News. I missed it. It's from, I guess, around the time of the UN climate summit a few months ago. But John Kerry is claiming the biggest hurdle to fighting climate change, the biggest hurdle to the net zero solar wind agenda is greed. Let's take a listen and I want to get your reaction. Hour two, clip one.
You ask, what is it that's in the way? The imperative of status quo? The way money works, the numbers of people who have pressured some of the oil and gas companies because they weren't doing as well as the ones that weren't doing stuff on the climate. Look at the pressure, you know, a bunch of asset owners and managers in New York and elsewhere in the world have been under to make more money. So put it down to greed, G-R-E-E-D, greed.
So Sterling, that's John Kerry on Bloomberg TV, you know, reporting that. So here's the question. Is it really? So the narrative is the reason we haven't gone full solar wind is the greed, greed of fossil fuel, greed of lobbyists, greed of and probably ignorance. But what's your response to John Kerry saying, if you don't support net zero, you're greedy?
A scion of one of the wealthiest families in the United States, if not the world, is preaching to impoverished people of the world about greed. You know, it reminds me of the BBC presenter that tried to call out the head of, I think it was Ghana or, you know, an African country just 2 weeks ago on the air. And he said, you don't get to lecture me on climate. We protect the earth. You're the ones destroying the earth. You're the ones that flies private, you know, John Kerry, private jets. Leonardo DiCaprio, I forget how much he waived of his last 10 films fees to save the earth. I don't think it was anything. You know, it's laughable when the uber wealthy lecture the rest of us who are just trying to get by, who $3.80 gas really affects, right? Who, when their grocery bills go up $40 or $50 a month or more, that's a problem. It's beneath John Kerry's margin at the bank. So for him to lecture anybody on greed is, he has no moral compass. He lacks any idea of ethics. He lectures poor people that they need to stay poor. While he doesn't do any sacrificing of his own lifestyle. And he tells you why. Why does he still take private jets? Because I'm important.
Yeah. Do you know? That's basically the equivalent of, do you know who I am? You know, like when a policeman pulls over. Okay. So let's go to the heart of this then. So much of this green sales for solar, when we hear that, you know, for the first time, solar power, renewables took over the grid, and it may have lasted a few seconds somewhere, and we're just one step closer. And we also hear the claim that it's radically cheaper. Now, you said they lie about this, but what's the basis for them even making this claim that solar and wind energy are cheaper than fossil fuels? How do they come up with that? What kind of math do they use to make these claims?
Well, there's two things. So to be clear, the cost of the equipment has come down dramatically for solar and wind. That's just true. Okay. It's cheaper to build the stuff now than it used to be, a lot cheaper, but that's all built on the backs of taxpayers, right? It's subsidies, it's mandates. Anything can be cheap, you know, if the taxpayer's paying 99% of the bill. Oh, I'm only paying a penny. Taxpayers pay the other 99 cents. The second thing is, well, let's look at Texas is a good example of this. So Texas way overbuilt wind because the government was doling out subsidies and tax credits and was making ratepayers pick up the cost of power lines running from West Texas, where the power is generated, to the cities in the East Texas and South Texas, where the power was needed. So you have these huge subsidies, you got a tax credit for every megawatt, and then, okay, the wind blows. The sun's shining. West Texas gets a lot of sun and a lot of wind. So it sounds like a good deal. And when it's generating, because they get the tax credit, they can actually sell into our grid, which is a competitive electric power system here. We have competition. They can sell it in at negative cost. So they can say, we'll pay you a penny to take our power per megawatt, you know, per kilowatt hour, and we'll only take the 8 cents of the rest of the credit. Well, what that does is drive out their competition. Well, so the coal plants close, there's no backup, and then the wind fails. Or we get this thing called night that happens fairly regularly, where the sun goes down. And during those times, the power is much, much more expensive because we have to bring on peaking plants to make up for the lost power, and they're not cheap. And so for short periods of time, it can appear cheaper than, you know, it's like they used to promise with nuclear. Nuclear would be too cheap to meter. Well, for short periods of time, they can actually sell their power at a loss. But at what cost to the grid as a whole and to ratepayers when those, you know, the beautiful, the perfect conditions don't prevail. You know, we fought, our generations of our ancestors worked to develop electric power. And they worked to stop sacrificing virgins to get the rain to fall and to get the power, you know, we got away from that. We said, no, we don't want to be dependent on the whims of nature for all sorts of things. So our grid was designed by engineers who understood what it took to run a modern power grid and a modern industrial economy. And now it's being redesigned by politicians who aren't engineers and know nothing about that. And they say, well, someone told me it's cheaper, so let's just build more solar and save everyone money. Except, like I said, the data tells the story. It's saving no one money. It's costing everyone more.
Okay, well, then here's the political problem with that. We have this thing called the Inflation Reduction Act, and we also have every cabinet agency, of course, of Biden, is the climate agency.
I feel how inflation has reduced the last 2 years.
Yeah, the name is silly, but I can't, what was the total? I can't remember if it was like $270 billion, but the latest estimates are $1.2 trillion they're going to be able to spend. I don't even know how they're able to do it, but Biden was able to get a congressionally authorized bill, and now they're spending like four times what there was authorized, but that was the latest estimate. And of course, some California jurisdictions don't even have enough bureaucrats to spend the climate cash coming in from all this federal aid. So here's the question. As buffoonery and factually easy it is to debunk solar and wind as replacing fossil fuels under the net zero climate Green New Deal agenda, it doesn't seem to matter because it's mandated through federal agencies, executive orders, you could argue ESG, but more importantly, all the federal dollars and all the money going now into these startups, into the investment company, and into these investing into these firms, putting offshore windmills now into these startups, into the investment company, and into these investing into these firms, putting offshore windmills and solar panels. It doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime. Isn't it 5 years from now the problem going to be worse? I mean, I guess Donald Trump could stop it if he's elected. But assuming Biden wins re-election, this goes on indefinitely. This madness will continue. Is that your assessment? Or how do we stop this madness, short of obviously an election? And can an election even stop it?
It's not clear to me that an election can stop it very quickly or completely. But yeah. I'll say this. You asked how they can do it. We had a little thing in the 1770s here in America called the Revolution. And one of the talking points, if you called them talking points back then, of the Revolution was no taxation without representation. You know who has no representation for all the tax dollars they spend? Future generations that'll be paying off the huge deficit and debt.
Yeah,
that's how we're doing it. It's not through tax dollars. We're not bringing in enough tax dollars to pay for all the green largesse that is being spent. That's on the backs of future generations. And you say, oh, well, they'll benefit from a better climate. The problem is the government's own people, like the EPA. The EPA says we're issuing a mandate for electric vehicles. My suspicion is what happens is you have an electoral revolution. You have people kicking people out of office. You've got the kind of protest they have in Europe here, and suddenly politicians get it, and they rescind the EV mandate. But in the meantime, the EPA passes this mandate, and the EPA says, we expect more than half the cars in 2032, nearly 60%, to be electric, about 15% to be hybrid, because that's what the public wants. They have to mandate it because the public wants it. Yeah. The problem there is the companies are going under. Nobody's buying the dadgum things. They don't have the charging system. So, you know, it's true they can get it. They can force it. But I'm not sure they can force you to buy cars. Maybe they'll sell electric vehicles for less than it costs to manufacture them. You know, they'll do what the wind and solar companies are doing. Sell the power for less than it costs to generate. And then when the prices go up, you're stuck. It's ridiculous. But then the EPA, you ask, at least it's going to save the planet. Well, the EPA has asked, okay, how much does this EV mandate, yeah, will it reduce temperatures in the future? Oh, that's not how we count success. I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, the whole thing's about preventing temperature rise in the future. You don't count success that way? Okay, well, how much sea level rise? Oh, well, that's not how we count. We didn't measure that. We have no idea if it'll prevent any temperature change. We have no idea, but it's fighting climate change. So it's like, it's ridiculous. So someone did run a calculation through the same model that the IPCC uses, which is called MAGIC. The model is MAGIC. I think that's because it's all fantasy anyway. But they did, yeah, they did run the model, and the model said, oh, no, we can tell you exactly how much temperature is avoided 100 years from now. 0.00065% of a degree. That can't be measured by thermometers. Yeah. So basically what they're telling you is it's all pain. And maybe if they subsidize it enough, it's not even painful. But it's no gain for the environment. And what it is less freedom for you. I don't think this is really about, on average, about money. It's about power. It's about certain people believing they know how you ought to live. Not themselves. They don't apply the rules to themselves. You, the peasants, the people that in the old days would have been living in hovels, and they don't want you eating steak. Bugs are good enough for you. Filet mignon for me, bugs for you. That's their point. That seems to be their point of view. There are too many poor people. And, you know, and they love AVI, artificial intelligence. I don't know how I feel about AI. I'm not sure that it's that intelligent. But you hear these guys bragging. Oh, well, it'll reduce the need to work. What are all the people who are suddenly going to be out of work do? Well, as far as I can tell, they starve or eat crickets.
But by the way, I my phone now, my Samsung phone, I have the Fold 5, the kind that folds open. This now has AI. I can actually write, and it's called Shakespeare. I can write in Old English and text people. It'll rewrite what I say. Fascinating. But by the way, Samsung, when you get the new phone, they have a net zero United Nations app that on there, UNFCC, whatever it is. And it's all about sustainable development. And it comes baked in the app, and you have to go through all the steps to delete it. So that brings me to my next question. You're talking about EVs. Should we be giving automakers a break when they're pushing back now, but they were initially pushing EVs? Are they captured by the government, or are they colluding with the government to make these EVs? Now, keep in mind, you have a corporate bank in Australia saying they're not going to give out car loans for people who buy gas-powered cars. You had Nicholas Stern at a World Bank meeting, the former head of the World Bank, say that they're going to look into not global finance is not going to be financing gas-powered car production for the automakers. So should we give them a break when you see like the Toyota executive who was really weakly saying like, where we know people really care and we're trying to get our consumers an opportunity to reduce their carbon footprint, all this nonsense pushing EVs. Should we give them a break? Are they victims in this too? Or are they part of the villains in this push for EVs and EV mandates?
It's complicated. They are both victims and victimizers. You know, they are prisoners and collaborators. So they are prisoners to the regulatory system.
Yes.
You know, the government passed a law back in the 70s that allows them to set fuel economy standards. And they used to fight it all the time. And the government would say, oh, you got to go up 100%. And they say, no, we can't do that. It's impossible. How about 50%? They say, okay, they only wanted 50% in the first place. But what happened was, you know, we're old enough to recall there was something called the bailout about a decade and a half ago or so. And in the bailout, two of the three auto companies basically said, whatever it takes, just save us.
Yes.
Two of the big three. And what was saving them is, okay, so when we start mandating certain things for vehicles, you're going to shut up and go along, or else we gave you the money to stay alive. And they said, whatever it takes, we'll do it.
Wow.
Now Ford didn't do that, right? Ford has said we're cutting back on our EV line. To be fair to Toyota, They said, we're not going to invest so much in EVs. We're going to hybrids because we think they make sense. EVs don't make sense, but hybrids make sense. So they don't all speak as one. They are coming to the realization that consumers don't want this stuff. And so the question there is, how could they, at this stage, how could they really fight it? And what it would take is a, sort of a substantial, they'd have to be willing to substantially defy the government and or shut down their product line until the government says, whoa, this is too vital for us. You know, they could pull an Ayn Rand scenario where we just withdraw support. Okay, Ford no longer makes cars until you come to your senses. And so cars dry up, people start complaining, you know, but that's costly. That's not cheap. That's bad for jobs. It's bad for all sorts of things. The government might then start bringing in Chinese cars. The Chinese would love to our market, even though we're supposed to buy American, according to Biden. He waives that provision every chance he gets. or they could say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make as many as we can sell. And if we can't sell them, we're going to keep making, you know, gasoline powered cars. You know, if I would have loved Stellantis, which is now Chrysler, right? I would have loved Stellantis when GM and Ford were saying, oh, we're going to go electric. We're going to be selling electric. For them to say, you know what? Y'all sell electric. We're going to keep selling the V8s. The consumers will buy more from us. That we're going to have to, we'll pay the tax, because all it is it's a tax. It's a luxury tax. If it's the same thing that Rolls Royce and them have to pay now, Lamborghini. You pay a tax because you don't get the fuel economy they demand. Well, if they were willing to say, our consumers are willing to pay the tax because what they want is V8, they'd have been heroes, I think. They'd have stolen all the market share, but no one has stood up and done that yet.
Yeah, and that's a sad thing. We have to take a break. We're talking with Sterling Burdetta of the Heartland Institute. He's the director of the Robinson Center for Climate and Environmental Policy. We'll be right back after these messages on Unleashed on TNT. Stay tuned.
It's been said that when someone you love has Parkinson's, you have Parkinson's. The truth is, Parkinson's disease doesn't just affect the diagnosed. It affects everyone who supports and helps care for them. Worldwide, over 10 million people are living with Parkinson's, a neurological disease that affects movement. And with so many places to search for information, it can be difficult to know where to begin. The Parkinson's Foundation has answers. Answers for everyone in the fight. We can help you understand the disease, help you find expert care, give you tips for living a better life, share the latest research, help you find local support, and there's a free helpline you can call. Find your answers and join us in the fight against Parkinson's. To learn more, please go to parkinson.org or call 1-800-4PD-INFO. The Parkinson's Foundation. Better lives together.
One scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
When the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
I'm relying on luck, but who knows if it'll be on my side.
When it comes to disasters and emergencies, it's not a matter of if, but when. Take control. 1. Assess your needs. 2. Make a plan. 3. Engage your support network. Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell.
This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Unleashed on TNT with Mark Morano. We're talking with Sterling Burnett, the director of the Robinson Center on Climate and Environmental Policy at the Heartland Institute. Also, the Heartland Institute has this, and I'm not sure how well this shows up, but it's called Climate at a Glance. I was just aware that it was made available in the Google Play Store. It's now on Android. It's also available on Apple. Sterling, tell us a little bit about what Climate at a Glance is that people can get the app.
Yeah, well, a couple of years ago, we put together a series of short one-piece articles called Climate at a Glance, where we address different arguments in the climate debate, different things about the impacts of climate change. Just one page, just the facts, 3 bullet points, a graphic, and 2 paragraphs, and that's it. And we made a booklet out of it. that we sold, but we also delivered to thousands of teachers, science teachers nationwide. Well, we've continued to update those, the older ones, and to publish new one-pagers on different topics, because, you know, there's not just 30 topics. And we decided the quickest way to get it in people's hands, especially the youth, remember they access stuff on their phone, is through an app. So we've created an app. You can download it on Apple or through the Google App Store, and it's free. And you go to it, and you want to know about hurricanes, you click on it, hurricanes comes up, one pager on hurricanes. You want to know about the impact of the sun, you click on it, the sun comes up. You want to know about drought, what's going on with drought, it comes up, one page. Next time you're if you're a student, next time your teacher says, drought, you're getting worse, you click on Climate at a Glance app on drought, and says, well, no, the data shows not really. And all of it is referenced to official government or peer-reviewed literature.
Now, what kind of censorship have you faced? And are you, is there any fears that the Apple Store and Google Play Store could just pull your app? I mean, because remember, was it Parler got pulled because they were a free speech app? Is this likely to face restrictions because it's a climate denier app? What do you think? What's the rule? What's the, well, the regulatory state for this?
Now that you've made us famous, we might get censored. you know, we're flying under the radar until today. You know, my suspicion is it's hard. It would be hard for Google or Apple to censor us. I mean, not physically hard, but hard to justify. They have to give reasons for things like that. And we cite the IPCC. Are they going to say that data from the IPCC doesn't count? You know, so we're none of these are outrageous claims. We don't tell any lies or fabrications. We don't say climate change isn't happening. We just say the disaster claims that are supposed to flow from climate change aren't happening. And what says so? The data. Now, that doesn't mean they might not try and throttle us. You know, we have every Friday we have a live stream. It's called the Climate Realism Show. And sometimes we get throttled. Heaven forbid anyone mentions a certain disease from a couple of years ago and disputes over where it was caused and whether vaccines could cure it, immediately censorship ensues.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful about what we say, but we're not out there, you know, we're not bomb throwers. So I think we're okay.
I have to ask a question. I mean, who designed this? It's brilliant and well laid out. I'm not saying you're not paying me to say this. I really am impressed with the ease of use. It has big blocks, extreme weather, underlying science, and then all broken down by category. And it's a quick clip, great graphics, simple tech. It's really well done.
It was a real team effort. So the booklet itself, the material was Anthony Watts, James Taylor, and myself. The layout was our layout team who put together the website. And then we have a young woman named Keely Drukala who runs our media, our social, and she's the one that she worked with me to design how the app looks, you know, how you get the title. Some of the titles were too long, so we had to lop it off. She said, well, what can we afford to cut and still keep the substance? So I said, well, maybe you can cut this, this, and this. Anyway, it was
very well done.
A laborious project. You know, it took time to get it right, but I think we did it.
All right, we have about 1 minute left. Here's my last question. European Court of Human Rights has ruled climate action is a human right, climate inaction violated human rights, basically saying that the court held that the Europe's failure to comply with its duties to meet emission reduction targets, i.e. net zero, is failing to protect its citizens from the ravages of the climate crisis. They're saying this could have huge legally binding implications. Is climate action a human right?
Well, I've looked back in history. I've read my Locke and I've read my Grotius and other people who talk about rights. I've never seen anything about any kind of climate, any particular state of the climate that you have a right to. And that's because we don't control. You know, in the past, they recognized we don't control the climate. Only European parliamentarians and evidently justices think that humans actually control the climate, that there's a knob that we can push and suddenly the climate doesn't change. That's false.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Sterling Burnett, Director of the Robinson Center of Climate and Energy Environment Policy at the Heartland Institute. Thank you for coming back on Unleashed today. Great to see you, Sterling.
Thanks for having me on again. It's good to see you. Always good to see you, Mark. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano. We'll see you next time on TNT.